This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
We do this too, we're bringing that fire. Talking real talk, Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, they bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear. If you ain't listening, you ain't here.
Welcome back, y'all. It's another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. And as always, we are presented to you in partnership with brands that we feel represent the very best of the outdoor industry. So before we get started, we'd like to give a special shout out to Moultrie Products, Uhler's Archery, Threads Custom Bowstrings, G5 Outdoors, Blackburn Apparel Company, Deer Pip Scents and Lures, Vision Clothing, Bluebird Waterfowl Company, Angry Chicken Outdoors, Alps Outdoors, and last but certainly not least, a special shout out to the good folks over at Briley's for leaving a legacy of shooting innovation. Whether you need new cameras to elevate the scouting experience, new arrows, or anything for your archery setups, clothing, scent, or whatever it may be, as a supporter of the podcast, you can use promo code WDTTPROMO, that's WDTTPROMO, for 15% off anything on the website at Uhler'sArchery.com. Some exclusions may apply. With that being said, let's dive into another episode of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast with your host, Mr. Courtney Williams.
What's good, everybody? It's your boy, C. Will. We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I've got Trey, the Dreaded Archer, back on, my homeboy. One third of the new Jack Archers, and we're going to talk about last minute preparations for deer hunting season. It's coming up here shortly. What, how many days, Trey?
In 3 weeks.
Yeah, so 3 weeks. It'll be here.
20 some days.
Yeah, so you got the first week of September, it's on. So everybody's been hitting me up with questions. Everybody's been hitting me up, telling me what I need to do, this, this, and this. I was like, man, let's just make a podcast about it so I can get it out to the masses.
Oh, for
sure. First, we have some Breaking news. Trey just got back from a gender reveal.
Oh, yeah. Gender reveal.
Let's play some music. Church music. Gender reveal. Organ, baby.
Where you find this?
No, Trey.
Like, what we have? There'll be a new baby girl added to the Dreaded Archer.
New baby girl.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking news from the We Do This Two Outdoors podcast. You heard it here first, folks.
Right? Dude, it was pretty cool, man. Had all the family over and a bunch of friends and stuff. And what you call it? In fashion, you know, it can't be a Dreaded Archer, you know, gender reveal without, you know, bows and arrows. So that was actually the theme of it. My mom came up with it. So I, you know, shot the target, saw the pink smoke, and I was just like, I just knew it. I knew it. And I was excited, though. Everybody was excited. My dad, he was like, damn, boy, you and Nick, y'all got, I need a boy.
Can't get me no boy.
We 0 for 5 right now for boy.
Oh, man. Oh, Nick got 3?
2.
2. Oh,
I got okay. 1, and then my sister, she got
okay. 1. I guess. Yeah.
So 0 for 5 right now when it comes to boys.
Oh, girl. There ain't nothing wrong with that, though, man.
Bro, like this how wild it is, bro. There has not been a boy born in my family since, like, 97.
Ooh.
It's been all girls, bro.
It's like
entire family, like across the
really?
Board.
Really? Across the board. And nothing you can do about that.
Nope. Unless
ain't nothing you can do about that.
Unless you got a bunch of bread and you go over to China and over in Europe and get CRISPR, where you can pick the baby's height, weight, you know, max weight, potential weight, max height.
I'm getting
color, eye color.
670, 240. Left-handed, please.
Bro, that's wild, but I mean, they starting to, you know, do genetic stuff with people, so it's like, we do it with our animals. Why can't we're animals, so obviously we can do it with people.
That's crazy though, man. But yeah, man, congrats. I hope everything goes well with the pregnancy. Hope she don't have nothing crazy go wrong, man.
Oh yeah,
everything goes smooth, and
or she
been coming all right, and baby too. So.
Oh, she been catching hell, man, just with the nausea, man. But the first trimester was terrible. I mean, it was, she couldn't keep nothing down. I think the whole first trimester, I want to say she lost like 15 pounds, just couldn't keep nothing down. So we finally got out the first trimester, and so she's been pretty much cool. So hopefully it's smooth sailing to the end.
Yeah, I know I've only got one, but when my wife was pregnant with Samson, she was probably maybe not even a month out. She was craving Cracker Barrel, and she didn't have no crazy cravings or nothing like that, but this day she was craving Cracker Barrel. I said, you sure you're gonna be able to eat that? Yeah, I'm fine. So we ate. She got back in my truck, and she just looked at me. Her face was like greenish white, and she just looked at me. I said, open the door. She opened the door and threw up everywhere. I was like, why did you even do this to yourself? I said, I just wasted $30.
Exactly. Damn, that's a Cracker Barrel ain't cheap.
No, she's like, I'm sorry. I was like, it's cool. Don't even worry about it. I said, you got about I think she might have been like maybe like 2 weeks out from having him, but it was the craziest thing that happened during her pregnancy. She didn't have no crazy cravings or nothing like that. But
no, see Tia, she peach cobbler. It's been peach cobbler. Like, yeah, that was probably about 2 weeks. Her mom came up to visit, and it was like every night we had to have peach cobbler. So her mom was like, you know what? Because I was going to go buy them Patti LaBelle's at Walmart. Mom was like, I'm spending your money. She was like, I'm just going to make some. So she made a couple peach pies, blackberry pie, and then she made peach crisp. And then today, like, my mom got her a bag of peaches. She knocking peaches out. So it's something about peaches.
Something about peaches. That's how you should have known. Georgia. That's what you need to name the baby, Georgia.
I hope, man. I hope not. But she need to be an athlete. I don't need none of that shit back there. At all, but be beating cats off with a stick.
That's funny. I can't have no girls, man. I'm glad I have my boys. Man, I'd be in prison by the time she's 18 if I had a girl.
I'm telling you, bro, the way the world going, man, the way these young cats out here running around, bro. You heard stories back in the day. You're like, oh, yeah, show to pick up this chick, and her dad was on the front porch with a shotgun. Hey, I'm a bad dude, A-player.
Yeah, and he gonna have about 15 of his YNs right behind him with switches. Exactly,
that's the problem. Oh, you got a shot. We got switches.
Yeah, and hey, ain't the ones you pick off a tree either.
Exactly.
All right, man. So let's get into it. So I've been getting a whole lot of questions on Instagram, Facebook. Just people asking me in general, like, hey, see, we can finally feed deer here in Kentucky. So from May 31st to August or to July 31st, you cannot feed deer. You can feed now. It's August. So everybody's like, man, last minute prep that we need to do. So I'm going to make a podcast about it. So I was like, try to get Trey on. I was going to try to get Jay on, Tyler, Terry, and my boy Holden. But, you know, kind of late tonight, and I get it. Everybody's got to go to work stuff tomorrow, but
you know me, so I'm always down.
Yeah, you always down. So, last minute prep, man. So, do you recommend? Do you have any specific recommendations on like routines for last minute checkup on your bow? Like how do you make sure to ensure when you get out in the woods, your bow is all good? When you go up in that stand or that saddle or that ground blind, everything's cool.
All right, so the first thing I do is, so normally, you know, living in South Dakota, what I would do is I say probably beginning of August, I take my bow in to the shop and just get it everything looked over, get the timing, make sure that, you know, the first, second, third axis, everything is in line, make sure that my, what you call it, my rest and everything is all good. And normally it is, you know what I'm saying? Cause I keep maintenance up on my bow, but I go get that last minute, make sure the strings, everything good. Just get it looked over, you know, and that might take probably about 2-3 days. Cause Kim over at Archery Outfitters, he's very particular. Like he look over bow, he looking it over. I'm talking about everything. I mean, even to the point where he looking at, you know, screws and all that, making sure they're not rusty and no dirt, nothing. I mean, he clean. It looked brand new off factory floor when he get done with it. So after that, I put my broadheads on, and I use the Sever broadheads, and I just so you can lock. You can actually just lock the broadhead. You don't have to. They don't have a practice broadhead. You basically put it in practice mode. So you lock it up. Actually, I got one right here. So yeah, it's got a little screw right here.
Yeah.
I screw in and it locked it, so when it hit, it won't spring out. But so I go shoot, get it sighted in with the broadheads, and then I use my practice broadheads and up until the season.
Yep, about the same thing I do too. Make sure everything's good. Take it to my Bowtech, whichever one that may be at the time. I've got one about 45 minutes away, one 30 minutes away, one an hour and a half away. Just depending on who's not busy at the time. Make sure your first aim and third axis is good and everything. And a lot of people don't think about this. I know you do it, but when you're in the yard practicing, if you're going to be up in the stand, you need to be up
elevated,
like a higher elevation, shooting your bow. If you're going to be in a ground blind in a chair, you need to take that chair outside, practice, you know, all different ways that you're going to be moving, see if it's going to be squeaking or whatnot. I personally use either WD-40 or Ballistol to do away with that. I got a chair. It's a blackout chair from Bass Pro White got me a few years back. It was a squeakingest thing you've ever heard in your life, and put some of that oil on there so I can turn whichever way now and be good. And another thing I try to tell people, I know your answer to this, but how often do you retune or paper tune your bow leading up to the season?
I don't paper tune.
I know the answer to this, but I'm gonna ask you anyway.
But I will say this though. So I say a couple weeks ago, that's about a month ago actually, I was out in Tyler and I stopped by their bow shop that they got out there because we don't have one where I live. So was out in Tyler, went to the bow shop, and I asked the dude, I was like, new bow shop. Hey man, just look my bow over. The first thing he do is take it to paper. And I was like, I've never paper tuned my bow. He was like, you've never paper tuned your bow? I was like, never. And bruh, he was like, what you mean? Like, how do you not? I was like, man, the shop that I went to, he didn't believe in it. He said, if your bow is set up right, you don't need to paper tune it. And he was like, man, I bet you all over the place. Man, his first shot, bullet hole. I was like, hey, man. I said, hey, the old head know what he talking about.
Do you know how to paper tune? Do you know how to read a paper tune though?
Nope.
All right. I'm about to take you through a class. So basically the way I was taught, you shoot your bow, and if it's a high knock tear, like if it's the knock hits high,
yeah,
and you see it kind of stretching it, you either need to raise your arrow rest. Either lower your knock, like your knock where your knock point is, or you need to check the cam timing. Then you got a low left tear. You need to lower your arrow rest a little bit, raise your knock, check your cam timing. And I think the left tear, you got to move your rest to the right, and adjust your cable guard. I've got it all wrote down somewhere. And then like a right tear, you move your rest to the left. So basically it's like, if you're left, you go right, right, you go left.
Yeah.
I used to have my boy Wes, shout out to Wes at Barker Outdoors. He's in Lebanon, Kentucky here. He pretty much taught me all that. I said, man, can you write this down for me? Cause I was like, I didn't paper tune my bow either until I met him. He's like, how did you not paper? I was like, I didn't. Once I got my bow set up and I was hitting where I needed to hit it 20 yards, like, why I need the paper tune for?
Exactly. I'm already hitting what I'm hitting. But, hey, for anybody getting into bow hunting, I'm going to tell you right now, this book right here, The Bow Hunter's Encyclopedia, is all you need. This book right here was Dwight Shue wrote this book. I want to say it was in, looks like 97. But everything you need to know. If you need to paper tune your bow, it's in that book. Everything you need to know to work on a bow is in that book.
Everything you need to know. You heard it here, folks. The Bow Hunter's Encyclopedia.
By I've never heard of it. R.I.P.
Dwight, who? Dwight around your lip. 45, 47. Don't open the potato chips until you pay for them.
It's a classic. Oh, but yeah, I've gotten a lot of grief over the years when people hear me say that, like, dude, you never paper tune your bow? And I'm like, nah, I never have. And when they ask why, the only thing I can give them is what I was told by Kim. And this is basically how he walked me through it. He goes, when people paper tune your bow, they shooting your bow at what? Maybe 5-6 yards? If that, it's usually right there.
Maybe not even 5-6. It's like
probably closer than that. So he actually we walked through it. So he took my he has a little paper tuning little device. So I shot my bow. Boom. He goes, all right, you shoot a bullet hole. So then he took it down at like 10 yards and shot it. He said, oh, you're tearing a little bit to the right. So then he put the paper down at 15 yards, shot it. It's like bullet hole. Put it at 20. Oh, you're tearing a little bit. He said, here's the problem. He was like, you don't shoot your bow at two to three yards. He goes, you're shooting your bow at various distances. And he goes, and one, you're shooting inside. So shooting inside, you don't have the wind factor to worry about. He said, so you're tuning your bow for in an environment that you're not going to be hunting in. He goes, now, if you're a target archer, it might make a little more sense. He said, but he goes, that arrow was doing so much moving when it's going the further you shoot out, that shooting a two to three yard bullet hole in paper don't do it. It tells you something, but it's not detrimental. It's something that you don't have to do if your bow is set up correctly. So I just kind of like, at the time, I didn't know nothing about archery anyway. Everything I learned from Kim. So I was like, well, he don't do it. I ain't doing it. And I ain't never had a problem with my bow.
It makes sense. Cause I'm like I said earlier, you know, if I'm hitting where I need to hit at 20, 30, 40, like, why do I need a paper tune? He said, man, the more you draw them strings, all that tension, he said, something might be off. You know, yeah. It might be off a millimeter, a centimeter, but he's like, that millimeter, centimeter, especially shooting target archery, it's a definite because those points count. You know, you could be an inch from the 12 to the 12 ring, and that's, you know, 10, 12, or 8, you know, but as big as a deer is, I feel like if you're off just a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference.
No, especially not in realistic hunting ranges. You know what I'm saying? Like the average hunting range is going to be, you know, 25, 30 yards. Now, if you shoot at animals at 60, 70, 80 yards, okay, now you really got to start fine-tuning stuff, even down to your form.
Right.
But in, like, close quarters, yeah, if I'm off an inch or two, it really don't matter. Like, I'm not getting into the weeds with it.
Right, yeah, I agree with that. Some people, you know, they want to make sure it's wherever they're shooting, they're, you know, they're hit, which I get that, but 25, 30 yards, you know, like you said, if you're shooting 60, that's going to make a big difference. 25, 30 yards, and you're off about an inch, half inch, you're still going to harvest an animal. Yeah. You're still going to hit some type of vitals and cover that animal.
I think what like the real question is, and like the test is, like, and you got to look at like the science behind arrow flight. Like, at what point do the fletchings take control and start correcting the bow? I mean, correcting the arrow. Because, I mean, like I said, that arrow is flying straight, but, you know, the wind might come out the west and it might, you know, boom, like knock it to the right. But then it, you know, the fletchings eventually going to correct it. So your arrow is constantly doing all this at flight, but, like, you know, how often, like, how fast does it take the fletchings to correct the flight? And like, that's something like, I don't think there's really no test.
I don't think there's no test for that.
I mean, you need a lot of cameras, a lot of high speed cameras, and slowing it down and watching and going by frame by frame by frame to catch.
I'm sure somebody's done that before or tried to do that at some point. As many high speed cameras as they got out there now with some of these, you know, big name archers, man. You know, maybe that's. Yeah.
But then every arrow.
Maybe that's something we need to do.
but every arrow is going to be different, and your conditions are different too.
Yep. Every arrow. Yeah. You're not going to be able to basically remake, I guess, the conditions that you're going to be in. You know, you could be up in the mountains, Colorado, and then you go to, like, say, the rolling hills here in Kentucky. Yeah, that's two different terrains, two different winds.
Elevation, the wind's thinner there, the air's thinner there. So they're going to fly a little different.
Yes, yeah, that's something to think about, though. I never thought about it like that.
Dude, there's so many factors that go into the way an arrow flies. I see why people do. Like, they try to make sure that everything is – they try to control as much as they possibly can. But then there's some stuff that's like, man, like, you just get into the weeds with it. You get lost. And especially if you're a new archer, it could get very overwhelming trying to figure out all this minute stuff.
Yeah, so like, and for a new archer, you don't need to be thinking about all that when you got that bow drawn back or you're about to draw, because all that in your head and you're trying to, you know, pinpoint where that arrow's going to go. You got your anchor, all that's going through your head. That bow, you know, that bubble's going to be shaking on you a little bit. All that's going to be in your head. You're probably going to miss that deer.
Yep. But what I will say is, if you're a person that whatever bow shop you went to when you first started getting into archery, if they paper tuned your bow, if they had a routine that they did to work on your bow, have them do that.
Right.
Because the last thing you want to do when you drawing back on that deer, oh man, I didn't paper tune this time. Oh man, I didn't have the person didn't do this to my bow. He didn't do that to my bow. You don't want that thought going to your head. So if there's something that you do, a routine that you go through it, because the last thing you want is for that to pop in your head while you're drawing back on that animal. So most people think that, you know, when it comes to being good at archery, that it's, you know, I would say 75-80% skill. Man, I would say it's more confidence. I say confidence is like 50% of it.
Mm-hmm.
I might say confidence is 75% of it.
Maybe 75, yeah.
75%. If you ain't confident in your equipment, you can throw that shit out the window.
Yeah.
So I would say 75% mental, you know, adding confidence into that, and the rest of it is just, you know, the time range, time, and form.
Yeah. And I will say this for the people out there who haven't, you know, gone in the bow shop and got their bow tuned or haven't got a bow yet, make sure before you go out to hunt that you're comfortable with your bow.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go buy a bow just because your buddy's got a Matthews and you want a Matthews. You know, go to a shop. We've talked about this on several episodes now. Go to a shop that has multiple brands of bows that you can test out and shoot. Find what's comfortable for you, because what's comfortable for me might not be comfortable for you, or vice versa. So you need a bow that you feel comfortable shooting, and the more that you feel comfortable, you know, you feel comfortable in your equipment, the more confidence you're going to have when you go out there, when you pull that bow back. Hey, I got this. It's just like me in the backyard. Let that arrow ride, watch it sail through, go find that deer. Or go find that elk or pig or whatever. But if you're not comfortable with what you're shooting, man, like, you know, you need to do some praying and go back in that bow shop and be like, hey, man, you know, this ain't working for me. Let's do some trading. Let's do something.
Oh, exactly. I was talking to Jay. He owns a bow shop out in Tyler, Griffin Archery. And I was asking him, like, hey, man, do you let people, you know, test bows? And he goes, oh, yes. He goes, if a person comes in to buy a bow from me, it's mandatory that they shoot three different brand of bows. He goes, I can't tell you how many times I've had people come in and say, oh, you know, I want a new Matthews. And I'll ask them, is this your, you know, do you own a Matthews? No, this is my first time buying a bow. Well, I'll set up a Matthews for you, but I'm also going to set up an Elite and I'm going to set up a Hoyt. And he goes, 9 times out of 10, the guy that came in looking for an X brand normally don't leave with that brand.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, he said guys come in that they wanted a Hoyt. He goes, I let them shoot a Bear Adapt and they end up loving the Adapt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a homeboy that owns a Cumberland County Sportsman Supply here in Kentucky. Shout out to Dylan and his pops. You know, they hooked me up a lot. I actually took my boy Clarence down there and got his first bow. And the bow that they give me to give to somebody who was basically trying to get into archery or looking into it, his draw was too long for that bow. That bow only went to 30, and yeah. He had to go to, I think, 31, maybe a 32. I can't remember, but luckily they had something there to fit him. But he said every time that he comes, you know, somebody comes in, he's like, hey, I'm looking for the newest, you know, Matthew. He says, well, I got him, but have you ever shot one? No. Okay, I'll set this up, but then I got this bow tech over here that's a good bow, and he says Hoyt, Elite, Darton, Matthews, PSE. He's got pretty much whatever you need. 9 times out of 10, he said, whoever walks in there to look for Matthews, leaves with either a Bowtech or Dart. Somebody that walks in there looking for a Hoyt leaves with a Matthews, a Darton, or something different. Like you said, it's always somebody that comes in like, hey, I want this particular bow, but they've never shot that bow. Then they shoot another bow. Oh, this feels better to me. Well, if that feels better to you, why would you want to buy the bow that you came in here for and this feels better?
Yep. Bro,
it simply comes down to like I always go back to the Sitka boys. If all your homies is wearing Sitka, you show up wearing Bandit, they're going to ride you out.
Yep.
Why you got that on, man? Why you got that on? If all your boys shoot Matthews, you come shooting the Bowtech, they're going to ride you out. But that Matthews might not fit you. Yep. That Sitka might not fit you. You might be wearing that. You might be more comfortable in the Bandit or, you know, a different brand. You got to go with what's comfortable, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of times you only really deal with that with like new archers. Like yep. once somebody is what they say seasoned, they've been doing it for a while, they know their brand. But a lot of times your brand might change. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You like, for example, I love my Matthews V3. I shot the lift, I did not like the lift. But I shot the lift X and I like the lift X.
Mm-hmm.
So just because it's your brand don't mean they're gonna continue to make the bow that you like. You know, it might not, they new bow might not fit you. So you gotta test bows out, man. You gotta, like you said, feel comfortable with what you're shooting. And sometimes if you want to get a new bow and the brand that you enjoy might not have the bow that they make, they flagship might not fit you, but Darden. They just drop a bad bow. And you go shoot that, you're like, man, this fit. Hey, now you got a Matthews in the Darden. Mm-hmm. Ain't nothing wrong with that. I got a garage mm-hmm. full of bows. I got from Bear, PSC, New Breed, Matthews, Mission. Bro, I got a ton. But every bow that I got, I'm very comfortable with. Like, I love it.
Yeah, I got a Matthews. I got a Bowtech. I got a Darton and a Prime. I'm very comfortable with any of them bows that I pick up. I can pick up any last one of them and feel comfortable with. Now, the bow that I'm probably going to take out this year, starting off, is probably going to be my Bowtech Justice, just because I've been shooting it a lot. It feels comfortable to me in my hands. The Lift X behind me, I love this bow too. I'm gonna take it out some too, but opening day, that's the bow I feel more comfortable with is the Bowtech and the Dart. They're both good. I still haven't got a chance to shoot the new form yet. I've been wanting to go from.
I ain't seen one in a while yet.
Up the road here, there's a place called the Outback Shack. He's a guy. He sells Elite Dart, an older guy. Knows his stuff, man. He's been bow hunting for 40 plus years now. Goes elk hunting out west every year. And his first bow he ever picked up was an Elite. So he started selling those. And then he got into Prime, started selling Primes. Now I think he's got some Dartons up there. But, I mean, he's one of them guys. He's like, man, he didn't like the way the Matthews felt. The Bowtechs at the time when he was starting to get into archery, it's when, you know, Bowtech was having a lot of problems with limbs and everything like that. He didn't want somebody to come in and, you know, break a limb and then come back, man, you told me this bow was this and this and this, and then I got to send it back. I might lose a customer that way, is the way he was explaining it. So he's like, I try to sell, you know, stuff that nobody else sells in that part of the town, because right down the road, you've got a Hoyt dealer, and you got a Bowtech dealer, and you got a Matthews dealer. And if you go a little bit to the north where he's at, you get a little bit different. You know, you get different. So if you're in that town in Campbellsville, you can go less than 2 miles and try out pretty much every brand of bow that they make, and you can make your decision for yourself.
That's the best way to do it. I've always wondered, man, what if a company came out that like made like you tell them what you look for in the bow. I want this, 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 and this. And bro, they custom make that bow like made to order for you.
So every bow that they make is pretty much
one to one. It's like a
one of one.
One of one.
It'd be dope, but it'd be hard for them to, I guess, get them out the door fast, because you got, depending on marketing dollars and how much that company is and how big that company is, if you're getting custom orders every day and you've only got, say, 10 people working in there, and they all got a specific role to play in that bow that you're custom making for them, that's going to take a while for them to get out the door.
I mean, if you look at the actual like bow, like the riser, I mean, that's just a CNC machine, or, well, I forgot yes. what that machine's called.
Yeah, I think it's a CNC machine. Yeah.
C machine. So that's going to cut the bow out, boom, right there. And then at that point, once you got the limbs, because, and let's be real, the limbs, the cams, cables, all that shit going to be the same.
Pretty now, much.
Really, it's based on like weight. We'll make the bow to the weight that you want. And based on what weight, well, these are the cams that go with that bow. These are limbs that go with that bow. So, I mean, it would have to be a company that got a lot of money. They got a lot of money up front, where they're not worried about burn and turn. They're more so worried about getting the customer that right bow.
Right.
They really don't care about, oh, I sold, you know, 300,000 bows this year.
Mm-hmm. Because it's basically like somebody making you like a custom rifle, basically.
Exactly. Because now I only have money tied up in cams and maybe grips. Hell, I don't see you having cams and limbs. That's all you got money tied up in, because a riser is made to order.
Yeah, depending on what you want it made out of, whether you want it made out of magnesium, carbon, aluminum, whatever. You know, you start there, and then, like you said, whatever weight that you want, you got cams that match that bow.
Yep.
The grip that you want, or whatever.
They also have to have. Now, a company like that, they also got to have like something else coming in. So they might make a bow. So like, if Matthew's like, all right, we got our flagship line, but we also got these Matthew Customs.
Yeah, it's like most of your firearm manufacturers. Like if you get on like Smith & Wesson, I mean, you can buy all of their firearms that they sell, you know, online, look at them. But they also have like a custom shop.
Yep.
Where you tell them, hey, I want this type trigger, these type sights, you know, whether you want a suppressor type, you know, suppressor sight heights, you know, a threaded barrel, whatever you want, and they'll custom make that gun to fit you, you know, whether you're shooting competition or whether you're just wanting something to carry or a showpiece. So, I mean, yeah, I could see Matthews or some like a bigger company doing something like that, where you've got your flagships, but you've also got like, hey, here's the custom line, and if you want this, it's 7 to 10 weeks out.
7 to 10 weeks out, and it's got a big price tag on it. So for every custom, basically what you got to do is one custom bow equals two to three flagships.
Yeah, which that's the way you probably had to do it. Yeah.
Which would be, I mean, you're looking at probably at minimum $5,000 bow naked.
Yeah, that's probably the minimum that they probably have. They probably would have to have a minimum to make, you know, take time out. All right, we got 15 custom orders that we just got in last night. Chris, you and this person go work on them. We'll go over and work on the regular flagships.
Yep.
Let me know when they're done so I can email the customer. Hey, we're sending this bow to your bow shop. Pick it up. Got any questions? Holler at us.
Yep. And bro, but I can see a company like Matthews not doing it, because you're gonna lose 25% of your flagship buyers.
Yep, because everybody's going with that custom.
They're going with that custom. If you're a person that buy that custom, you're probably not gonna be buying a boat every year. You're probably gonna you spend $5K on a boat naked, which after you at the site, rest, and all your accessories, you're looking at probably what 75,000.
At least 7,000, probably. Another $2,000 on top of that bow.
You got that bow is going to be your bow for the next 5-6 years.
Especially if they do like any type of like customized engraving or like Cerakote or something like that, where you can like engrave like what your logo or whatever you want in the riser somewhere. Like, I can't remember the guy we met out in Oklahoma that did that, but he made that custom wallet that was dope. They had my logo on it, but yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you're looking at, you know, $5,000-$6,000 for that, then another $1,000-$2,000 for all your accessories. Yeah, you're going to keep that bow for a long time. I mean, that's one of them bows, like, even if you do buy a new bow the next year, or let's say the next 5 years, you're going to keep that bow because you customize it to you.
It's too custom, and the resale value is going to be terrible.
Especially if it's made, made to fit for you. Yeah, absolutely. You ain't gonna be able to sell that thing.
No, not at all.
Yeah, man. So drills that you recommend for getting out there before the season. I know me personally, leading up to the season, I learned this from my OG. I'll go out and shoot 3 to 4 times a week before the season, but when I go out there, I'm shooting one arrow.
Yeah. See,
why do you do that? And I'm like, simply because 9 times out of 10, you're only going to get one shot.
Yep.
When that animal comes out, and you got to make that shot count. So the more that you shoot, the more that you're going to get tired, and the more that you're going to pick up more bad habits. That's the way I look at it. And if you're one of them guys, that you're still out there shooting when your shoulder's tired or your hand's shaking, you're already picking up bad habits. So you need to stop, wait till the next day, wait a couple of days, shoot again. But I'll go out and shoot one arrow. I'll make that arrow count. But leading up to that, you know, before the season starts, 2 months, 3 months, you know, I'm going out there shooting probably 25, 30 arrows every time I go out there, at least, you know, or maybe more, just depending. But leading up to the season, like, we got, 3 weeks left?
Yep.
Shoot one arrow. That's it.
Yeah, see, I got to set up a little different. So if you have the ability to do this, this is what I do. So, like, I can open up my master bathroom. It opens up out to, like, my pool area and all that. So on the far end from my door to the fence, my first fence, it's right at 40 yards. So I got a target out there. So I get up in the morning. I'm talking about I wake up, use the bathroom, and grab my bow, open that door up, knock an arrow, and just that's the coldest I'm gonna be.
Right.
Literally waking up and going just and where it hit. And I was like, you know, if I hit right down the middle, well, actually the target I got has got like a little. It's got the lung on it, and it's got the heart. And I'm like, this morning is going to be a heart shot. If I get right smack dab in the lung, I mean, in the heart, all right, hey, it's a 10. That's the animal gone. If I say miss the heart, but I maybe clip it, and it's going to be double lung, hey, animal's still down, but it wasn't where I was aiming at. So, you know, I give it a 7 or 8. Still, it's still a dead animal. And then I get off work, and then I'll go and I'll shoot maybe 4 or 5 arrow ends. So shoot 20, 25 arrows. And then I'm good. And then, but if when I come out after work, if my first 5 arrows are all in the heart, I'm done. I'm like,
right.
I just don't want to overdo it.
That makes sense. Yeah, the way I do it, like say tomorrow, when I get off work, I'll go 20 yards, boom. Then the next day, I might go back to 30 or 40, boom.
make sure, and I'll just kind of rotate between 20 and 40, because me personally, unless it's an absolute stud of a deer, I'm not taking a shot past 40.
Yeah.
And if I'm taking that shot at 40, he's going to be a stud too, you know, because I mean, I feel good enough as an archer that I'm going to make that shot. But there's so many different variables out there. When you get out there, like, you just don't know. Something might go terribly wrong as soon as you release that arrow. You know, you never know. But 40 yards, that's max. You know, I've met some guys, well, I'll take a shot at 80 yards. Like, yeah, it's fine, but bro, it's all what you feel comfortable in.
Wrong at them 80 yards, bro. Like,
so much.
The arrow's in the air for a long time. Not like a long time for an arrow to be flying. Not really a long time. Not, I ain't talking about like no minute or nothing, but like, you looking at minimum 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
80, at least 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Bruh, in 3 seconds, that animal could just literally take a step back,
jump, flinch, do anything.
Yep.
No. The string jump is—I never did think it was a thing until I actually seen it with my own two eyes, and I missed a deer because of.
Yep.
I was telling my homeboy about it, and I was like, "What just happened?" He said he jumped the string. I said, "What do you mean he jumped the string?" He said he heard string when it hit the riser. When it hit the stop, he heard the string and he jumped. Oh, is that natural? Yes, it's very natural. You know, I was new. So now you got to compensate for that.
And see, I guess I just always done it because when I watch TV shows, they say, like, you know, when you're shooting at a deer, you don't want to shoot whatever. If you shoot from a tree stand, say you're shooting at the deer's at 20 yards, drop your pin just a little bit because they're going to drop their back. They're going to jump that string.
I've also been told too, which you probably know this too, that especially if you're up in a tree stand, like, you want to shoot not where the arrow enters, but where it's exiting.
Yep, where it's going to exit.
If that's what you're aiming for. Like, if you're, you know, you're aiming for those, if you're straight down, you're not aiming for where it goes in. You're aiming where the arrow's going to come out at, you know. And it's hard for some hunters to understand, but once you get up there, and most seasoned hunters already know that, but as a new hunter, you know, once you get up there and, you know, that deer's, you know, in drawing range for you, like, it'll make a lot more sense, I guess, when we say, like, where it exits.
Yeah. Hey, I kind of want to go back, and I was wrong. So I asked ChatGPT, how long would it take a 420 grain arrow traveling at 298 feet per second to hit a target 80 yards? It said 0.85 seconds. So not even a whole second. So actually I was wrong.
Well, it also depends on your draw.
Yep.
And also depends on how fast your bow is or what you shoot, 70 pound, 80 pound, 60. There's a lot of variables in that too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it'll account for it because I said 298 feet per second. That's going,
yeah.
That's going to be depending on how much weight you pull. But yeah, so, you know, 80,
that's fast. That's getting there quick.
That's quick.
That's quick. But, man, I get like people say, you know, I'll shoot 80. You know, if you're like me and hunt field edges that are on woods and like that deer is in a wide open. There's nothing behind you, you know, there's nothing that's in that, you know, in that field that you think you're going to hit. But if you're in the woods trying to shoot 80 yards, branches and everything, dude, that's just crazy to me.
Yep.
Because all you got to do is hit that one. You think you got a clear shooting lane, but it might be that little bitty branch that you don't see. And it just hits that branch and deflects off.
And that's it.
That's all she wrote. And deer is running.
Lost arrow, lost deer.
Yeah.
But
I get it. Do you think, like, I think I've asked this question before to you, Jay, but like, do you think, like, things like tack,
shot 3D, R100. Do you think that helps an archer when he's actually in a hunting situation, or does it help them?
No, it like so. The only thing tag do is one, it give you confidence in your gear. If you know that your bow can go off to 80 yards and it's hitting, you know, boom, that 12 ring at 80 and it's dialed in, it give you that confidence. But as far as in a hunting situation, it really don't, it don't help you, because how many times are you going to have a shot that's that clear? Actually, I would say tech don't give you clear shots. So you really got to test, you know, get, you know your gear. So it don't help you in a hunt situation, though, at all. Other than having the confidence in your gear, that's about it. But I will say this, though. For a less mature hunter, if he hit a target at 95 yards at tech, when he get out there in the field, in his mind, he honestly believe he can hit that deer at 95 yards.
Yeah.
It'll gas him up.
Yeah, I could see that too. Because I'm kind of on the fence about it, because like, yeah, you know, especially if you're shooting like the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, like course or something like that, you know, that's probably the most wide open of a shot that you're going to get.
Yeah.
And like I said, if you can hit those elk at 100 yards, 95 yards, 70 yards, 80 yards, when you go out to your location that you're hunting and that deer steps out at 80 yards, oh man, I was hitting them deer, you know, them elk out there. I'm gonna let this fly. Yeah, but where were you hitting them? Were you 12 ringing them, or were you hitting them somewhere too far back or too far forward? You know, yep. That's the thing. You gotta, can you consistently hit the kill zone at 95, 100 yards? Just because you heard foam don't mean that you need to be taking that shot.
Exactly. A lot of guys think, oh, I hit foam. You hit foam, but what foam was you hitting?
Right.
You know what
I'm saying? The first tack I ever went to, all I kept hearing from people, man, I put a bad shot on it. Oh, man, that's all right. Foam is home. Foam is home. Yeah, foam is
home. No. don't get to preaching that, because a then catch the all I gotta do is hit. If I can hit it, I can just clean my shot up. No, there's a whole lot more to go into it. But also, you got to think about it too. A lot of these targets that attack, they are not a 1-to-1 ratio target.
Right.
Either a lot smaller or a lot bigger than what actually there is.
Absolutely.
Now, if the target was a 1-to-1 of your average size elk, deer, moose, whatever you're shooting, and you constantly hitting that, which will be the vital, that vital V, hitting this area, and you constantly hitting tight groups, you good. But like I said, all the scenarios are different, because you like when you at a shoot like TAC or Mountain Archery Fest or Shot the 3D Experience, that whole situation is just different, because you out there with your homies. It is not a high stressful environment. Mm-hmm. You are, you know, y'all talking, BSing, you're getting up, you're talking trash while you're knocking your arrow, you go back, you, and you can sit at full draw for 15.
As long as you want. The target ain't moving.
But a problem that I have when I'm out hunting, when I go back full draw, I'm so afraid that deer's going to take off. I try to settle my pen. I rush everything and then just shoot, which, you know, you've seen it when y'all shoot with me. I pull back, and I let go.
Quick draw.
Yeah. So I've, like, over the course, I'll say that, like, the last 2 months, I've been going out and I'll just knock my arrow and I'll have my watch and I'll let it, you know, I'll hold for 10 seconds and shoot. But I know I'm not going to get. In my head, when I'm hunting, I know I don't have that much time. But in all reality, in every hunt situation I've ever been into, I had plenty of time. The deer had no idea I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So don't rush your shot. But you also, that adrenaline is pumping, which is why you got to do, you know, you got to know, which I, people probably going to bash me for this, but doing exercises, jumping jacks and all that stuff, and then picking up your bow and shooting, that still ain't even simulating the, what you call it.
Adrenaline.
You can't, you can't, you can't.
No, you can't. And I get buck fever real bad. So, like, mine's usually now that I've been hunting so much or hunting long enough, mine is after the shot. Usually during the shot, I'm okay. But as soon as I let that arrow go or pull that trigger on the right, you know, rifle, and that deer, you know, you see him flinch or whatever and take off, that's when I'm.
Yep.
That's when I'm shaking, you know. I can't even pick up my phone, you know.
Yeah, I'm like really nonchalant about it. Like, even my brother, he saw when he was in South Dakota and I shot this deer, he was like, bro, the whole time you had pulled back and you shot, he goes, you were just so calm and like nonchalant. Then once the arrow flew, you got to, I can't talk. Yeah. I'm rushing to grab stuff. I'm shaking. It's just weird, but I think that just comes from, honestly, I would say like playing football, like sports, like in the moment, shaky. I'm composed. But then once I've completed the objective, now it's the time to, it's when the adrenaline hit, the celebration starts, the just trying to decompress and process what I just did.
Right. Yeah. Like, growing up, when I was learning to shoot, my dad and my grandfather, they were big on this, especially shooting shotguns. As soon as you see that target in your sight, pull the trigger. Don't take the time to sit there and look at it and look at it and look at it and look at it and pull the trigger. Like, especially like bird hunting and stuff, rabbit hunting, like, as soon as you get them in your sight, pull the trigger. Because the longer you sit there and wait, a rabbit might be gone, the quail might be gone, dove, whatever. But archery, throw all that out the window.
Yep.
Because if you don't take the time to settle everything down and get that bubble right and settle your pin down where you think you're going to hit, you're not going to hit. You're going to hit high or you're going to hit low.
Yep.
Like, you got to take the time out to calm down, breathe, settle everything down, then take your shot. You know, I got a shot sequence that I go through and I tell everybody new, find what their shot sequence is. It might be 5 seconds. It might be 10 seconds. But, like, sometimes in the wild, like you said, a deer might smell you or he might see you move and he's about to take off. So you kind of got to speed everything up to make sure. But as long as everything's settled down, you got that bubble right and your pin settled, man, you're probably going to end up hitting that deer. But it's, like you said, so many variables with bow hunting. I think that's why I love it so much, because it's always the unknown, you know.
Oh, definitely. I know, and you know, since we're talking about, you know, last minute preparation, one thing that a lot of people don't practice that old buddy had me start doing is, say for example, you hunting a ground blind. Actually, pop your ground blind up in your yard and simulate how you would reach for your bow in that ground blind. So no one sits in a ground blind with their bow in their lap and just and ready to go. So, like, I would set my target up at, you know, 30 yards, and I get in my ground blind, and I'll have my bow, you know, sits on his, with the little lamb sitting on his leg, sitting right next to me, and I would simulate, you know, me slowly reaching, grabbing my bow, but keeping my eye on the deer, you know. 99% of the time I got an arrow already knocked. So arrow's already knocked. My release is already on the D loop. So now I'm just grabbing it, keeping my eye on that deer, being able to go to full draw and just go through my shot sequence, you know, or I might put the bow on my left side, or I might put the bow on my right and act like I'm in my backpack and then look up and see the deer. All right, how am I going to move from here to here? So just putting myself in this weird, you know, different scenarios when a deer would present itself, that I'm not just sitting in the blind and just taking the shots, because it's never going to happen like that.
Right. I've got limb legs on most of my bows.
Yeah, so that's my limb legs, or you know, I had one blind that actually had a bow hook at the top, so I can hang my bow up at the top.
Yeah, because I'm used to hunting ground blinds. So I usually have my chair set up kind of to the right, and then my bow to my left. Since I'm right-handed, I can pick up left hand. You know, and when I was shooting the thumb release, the thumb was already on, all the release was already set on there. So all I got to do is pick up the bow and start pulling.
Yep.
You know, but yeah, you need to go through all those sequences just to make sure. And I tell people too, you know, this is little things. As soon as you get in the ground blind or whatever, draw your bow back.
Yep.
With an arrow. Make sure everything's good. Make sure you got a clean field of view. You know, make sure your peep ain't twisting and all that. You know, you don't want to wait until big boy gets in front of you. You pull your bow back and find out your D-loop's twisted or something like, or your peep sight's twisted or something like that, because I've had that happen too. You know, make sure you got clear shots. Make sure all that's good, but.
And see, checking my peep is part of my shot sequence. Like, I'll knock an arrow, and I always just hit my peep. Even when I know it's straight, I just still just...
I'll twist it every time. That's part of my shot sequence, too. Because your D-loop, for, you know, people that don't know, the newbies out there, all you old heads, you know that your D-loop and your peep should be in a line. Your D-loop's on the right, and this is, you know, your peep sight's to the left, you need to twist it a little bit.
Yep.
And the good time to do it is when you've got tension on that bow, twist it a little bit. So when you do pull back, you can see through it. And I got a homeboy, man, like he shoots a lot of 3D archery. That's all he shoots mostly. He hunts a lot too, but he shoots a lot of 3D. He hunts with a lens and a clarifier like he does in, you know, 3D archery. So he's got to really make sure all his stuff's in alignment, because if his peep's twisted just a little bit, he can't see out of that lens.
Yeah.
Or the clarifier that's in there, and it makes everything blurry. So he's got to make sure for sure. And he wears glasses like me. So I'm like, man, but he kills some big deer every year. And he said, man, I just feel comfortable because I've been shooting 3D so long. He said, all my bows have lenses and have clarifiers in them that it's basically like a rifle scope. You look through it, you know, you might have a 6X lens in there. It just makes everything blow up.
Yeah. Man, hey, I love those clarifiers. I ain't trying to drop that money on them.
When I first started shooting, I bought the Hamsky peep system, and I still got it to this day. And I love it, but I cannot hunt with it unless I'm in a ground blind that is kind of like a taller ground blind where when I push up the windows, I can't see any of that, you know, the mesh.
Yeah.
Because if I can see a little bit of that mesh, I don't know what it is about, you know, my off eye, it'll automatically go to that mesh and it'll mess everything up for me. But
I know cats would be shooting through that mesh. I'm like, bro, that mesh, they say it's shoot through, but. Bro, it's got to affect your arrow. Maybe not a bullet, but an arrow, it definitely affected.
I shot through one once, and it was about probably 5 years ago. I hadn't seen any deer this whole season, and I had put my blind on this creek that runs through my mom's property, and this was the time that, like, we had plenty of rain and stuff like that. So if we don't have a lot of rain, we'll have to put the cows where I was hunting at, because they can get to a bigger water hole. But there was no livestock or nothing like that there. And I hadn't seen any deer all season. And my cousin of mine was like, man, I want some deer meat. You know, he'd never had it. And he said, man, I thought you said you was a hunter, man. I thought you said you was a hunter, man. You ain't been seeing no deer. I said, man, I just ain't been seeing none. Like, they've just been coming out at night. Like, these deer were just all nocturnal. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get everybody some deer meat for the season, you know, so y'all can try it out, whatever. So I'm sitting there. I've probably been sitting there for like 2 hours. I'm sweating my ass off. You know, it's like 90 degrees outside in a ground blind. It feels like it's a sauna in there.
Yep.
But it starts getting dark, and I hear movement to my left coming out of these like patches, like thicket. We call it the wilderness because you can't see nothing over there. And all of a sudden, I see a head pop out, and I was like, game time. And I reach for my bow, and she looks dead at my blind. And I got like a little bitty opening that I was going to lift the window up. She's already looking at me. So I draw back, and she's sitting there like doing this. And I'm like, I'm just going to shoot through this mesh. It says if you shoot through it. She's probably at 25 yards. I shoot this deer, man. I swear she jumped 20 feet in the air and takes off. And I'm like, she's done. I was like, I was shooting those Swacker broadheads at the time.
Yeah.
And so I hear her go down, and I get out and call, and I'm shaking still. I call my boys, like, hey, we got some deer meat on the ground or whatever. And I look back toward my blind, dude. You know, as small as them arrows is, you know, I didn't think it was going to leave a hole. Like, man, that hole was like, it's big.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, I probably shouldn't have done that. So I tried to take like a piece of duct tape and like put across there, and it didn't work. And I'm like, I won't do that again. But I didn't have no choice.
Did you put her down?
Yeah, I put her down. She was down. She probably ran maybe 15, 20 yards, but she piled up. But I, like I said, she was at 25 yards maybe. And I've never seen a deer jump that high though, man. Like, I mean, she could have dunked a basketball. Like,
I didn't see him jump high. I'm like, man, how'd you get up that high?
I was like, Lord. I was like, you know, something hit her like that. She's scared, and I get it. But I was like, man, I ain't never seen a deer. I get it why they jump them high fences now, though. But
man,
but yeah, man, we'll keep rolling. Scouting. Last minute scouting for folks. Like, how do you approach scouting? You know, last minute, and just run it down for me.
So last minute scouting, man, I pull my game camera because I'm not one of them people that I check my game cameras like every other week. I normally it's at the end of every month. So
you ain't got no cell cameras?
Yeah, I got cell cameras in like a few spots, but like the main spot that I hunt, you get no cell phone service. So your camera, cell cameras ain't no good out there. So I'll have to go out there and check those once a month. So I'll go out there. So say the season is like August, I'm pulling those cameras at the beginning of August. So end of July, going in August, I pull those cams. I'm not going back out there. So pull it. And then it just, they've been out there since like March. So that's enough data to tell me what I need to know as far as the game cams. So I'll check it out and kind of make a plan on that. But then, like, you know, leading up to the season, I will go to – I normally keep, like, 3 to 4 spots that I'm going to keep in rotation and I'm hunting. So I'll go, you know, out there, like, once in the early morning and just kind of sit and just watch, scout. Then I'll go, you know, another time late in the evening. So right around that 4:30, 3:30 to 4:30, and just watch and put them to bed. Okay. Saw them moving coming out in the evening. They moving this way. They grazing this field. They doing this and that. And I'll kind of do that for at least 2 or 3 times per spot. And then that's it. That's all scouting that I do last minute.
Do you do any type of mock scrapes, minerals, or anything like that to kind of for last minute inventory, like if you do have a camera, like a cell cam out?
No, if I got a cell cam out, like I'll keep the mock scrapes pretty much fresh. I have like little drippers or, I don't too much use minerals, but mainly the mock scrapes, and I have a camera on it, which the camera that I got out now in the mock scrape, I have the dude, it's like the deer, they avoid that joker like the plague. Mm-hmm. I found like some old scrapes from like last year, and I put cameras on those and put a rope by it, or they hitting that joker hard.
So like some of the old mock scrapes you found, you just basically freshen them up.
Mm-hmm. Freshen them up.
Yeah.
Put a camera on it, but like the younger deer, dude, they have no idea that camera's there. But the mature deer that come through there, bro, they know they looking like, hey, this wasn't here last year. Right. Like they pay attention to like the small stuff, and I'm pretty sure it's like that red light that shine.
Mm-hmm.
See that, but the younger deer don't leave food with it. But no, I pretty much have like my scouting and everything done. So it's very few times where I'm scraping to get some last minute stuff in, other than just going out and actually putting boots on the ground and just sitting in my truck. Or sometimes I'll go out and actually, I've only done this like a handful of times, where I actually go to my stand and just sit in it. And this is, I guess you can add this to like a last minute thing. Know your route to your stand before you go hunting.
Like, right.
Don't just be trekking in. Like, you can't take the same route into your stand every single time. Like, on my brother's property, he got a stand that he can only hunt that stand when there's a north wind. If there's not a north wind coming in, he cannot hunt that stand. Mm-hmm. And I would say 75% of the time it's a southwest wind that comes. That's what that stand is. So it's blowing his scent directly into their bedding and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he cannot hunt that stand. So, you know, he can only hunt that, like I said, only hunt that stand in that particular wind. So therefore, he got to know which way to walk into that stand. He got some other stands on his property where, you know, he can't get out of his truck and walk straight to it. He got it because he cuts through deer bedding halfway through. So he has to walk all the way around to get to it.
It makes sense. That's why most of us, you know, season hunters have different stands for different, you know, wind directions.
Wind direction, yep.
For that reason, because you don't want to be blowing scent into their bedding area or where they're going to be coming from, because they're going to smell you from long ways off and
dip out.
Stranger danger.
Yep.
We gone.
Which was wild because, like, we've been out to that property several times, and we put the stand in, like, bro, you can't hunt this stand. He said, why? And I was like, bro, every time we've been out here, it's been a southwest wind and it's blowing right into their bedding. Like, oh man, that don't matter. He's still kind of green to this hunt thing. So one day we just like walked, like where the wind was blowing, the direction the wind was blowing to, we just walked towards the wind. And we got like far on the east side of that property, or the west side of that property, no, east side of the property. And no joke, you get down in there and we found an old scrape. So we found a scrape and we kind of see a little game trail. We start following the game trail, probably got about 25, 30 yards from that scrape. Boom, found another scrape and a couple rubs. Kept on walking, got probably about another 40 yards. Boom, there's another scrape. So I'm like, bro, this is a scrape line right here. So if you look at that first scrape line, if you stand in it, the wind is hitting you in your face directly. So if you hunt that stand and he checks this scrape, your scent is blowing right down into it.
Yep.
And he was like, damn. I'm like, yeah. So now you know. And then we went out there one day when it was a north wind, and you follow that north wind, and that far scrape that we found, the wind's blowing right into it. So I'm like, it's going to be, you're going to have to get to the far edge of this property. So the stand is probably really in a bad spot, just to be honest with you.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So I know a lot of people kind of been asking me this too, but I'm easy when it comes to stuff like this. Opening day, are you sitting waiting for your target buck, or are you just out there to kind of just see what's out there? Like if a shooter comes out, you taking it, or are you just waiting on your target buck?
Nope, because like I used to, and then what would end up happening is, man, I would at every location property that I hunt, there's at least one to two target bucks. And what'll happen is I'll be going in looking for this particular buck, and I start overthinking stuff. Then I'm not, if I don't see him, then it's like, well, I'm not shooting nothing, and then I end up not shooting anything at all. So I go in like, hey, I'm looking for this buck, but hell, if another buck come out that's just as good, I'm taking him. Or if a doe come out opening day, I'm gonna be real with you, I'll pull back on a doe real quick opening day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes the rest of the season a lot less stressful because I already got beaten the cooler.
Mm-hmm. Now you can sit and wait. Yeah, I'm the same way too, because I Me personally, like the past few years, I have not hunted early season simply because the bucks on my farm usually don't kind of start coming around till like mid-October to like maybe like October 15th to like Halloween. And then they'll be there. But like usually like the early September, I'm usually dove hunting somewhere.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10. But when I do go out there, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go deer hunting today. I'll go sit in my stand or whatever. You know, it's gonna be hot, mosquitoes, snakes, everything else. I ain't trying to stay out there all day. And my farm typically is an afternoon spot. It's not a morning spot. Mm-hmm. So I'll get there 3-4 o'clock, sit there. You know, I'll wait for the does to come out, and I'm gonna probably take a doe. And I got maybe 100 yards to put it on the back of my truck and take it to the skinning shed. So I ain't really got to, you know, skin it there, you know, or whatever. I can take it back. It's not, the meat's not going to spoil by the time I get back to where I need to take it. And then I'll have my ice and all that waiting, skin it out, throw everything in the cooler. I'm good to go. But bucks typically, like I said, don't start showing up to like mid-October. So I'll get my dove hunting in, and then mid-October, you know, as soon as I get home, work, I'm changing clothes, spraying down, I'm going to the woods.
See, with me, it also depends on if I'm hunting public or private. Private, I'm a little more strategic on when I go out.
Right.
Public, man, I'm out there. I'm out there, and I ain't too much. Even though I've seen 4 or 5 nice bucks on public land on my camera, I'm not even worried about them. It's like, I'm not here to hunt. Now, private land, I'm very particular about the days that I hunt, what winds I'm hunting, based on the knowledge that I got from my game cams and scouting. But
yeah.
Public, I'm out there.
Well, okay. Segue to the next question then. So, in your mind, what's one thing that most bow hunters overlook during like their last minute prep that ends up biting them in the ass when they get in the tree stand or ground blind or wherever they hunt?
Ooh, the batteries in a rangefinder.
Dude.
Nobody really checks the batteries in a rangefinder until they need it.
Dude, I could tell you. Well, we can get into it. So I've probably been hunting for maybe 2 years, bow hunting for 2 years, maybe. I'm at a neighbor's property, calling him up. Hey, you know, been seeing some bucks, some big ones across your big field going towards your creek. You mind if I put a blind out there? Yeah, I don't mind. Go ahead. So, but probably 3 weeks before the season, put a blind out there, put a camera. And that was back before, you know, cell cams were getting, you know, around. And I'd go in there every weekend checking this camera. You know, I didn't know no better. I was in there all the time, leaving scent everywhere. Seen Big Boy on camera. We call him Goliath. That's his name. He's probably an 8-year-old by now, because we see him come through every now and then. But he'll come through like one time, you'll get a picture of him, and he disappears. I don't know where he goes. I don't know where he beds, because there's 3 farms that surround us.
Yeah.
So get a can, you know, a picture of him coming in that week. He came in twice. The week after, he came in like 3 times. And that third week before the season, he was there every day at like 5:30, 6 o'clock. Heading towards like this big part of the woods. It's like real dark back there where I seen Bigfoot back here. So if y'all ain't heard that story, check out my Halloween from 2 years ago, I think. My Halloween special, go check it out. I'll talk about it on there. I seen
Bigfoot. That was last year.
Was it last year?
Last year, because I was on there.
Okay, yeah, that's right. It was last year. Yeah. I said, if y'all ain't seen it, Trey's on there. Yeah, if y'all don't believe me, y'all can ask me questions, DM me, I'll give you all the information. But anyway, I'm back here, man. Opening day, I get there probably like noon. Got my, you know, permethrin on for the ticks. You know, I'm ready to go. I got this little fan, little clip-on fan. I'm comfy cozy, man. Got my little cooler, backpack cooler. I got all my water. I said, I'm staying here till dark. I said, if this boy comes out, I'm getting him. So, seen some dogs come out right before dark, and these dogs keep looking behind them. Every time that they're, like, sitting there at my corn pile, they sit there and they look behind them. They chew a little bit, they look behind them. I said, there's a buck back here. Something's back here.
Yeah.
So, it's, like, probably 45 minutes, maybe an hour to dark. Here he comes, strutting across this field, man. And he's big. And I'm like, he's probably every bit of 160 probably at this time. And I'm like, game on. Pull my rangefinder out, click the button. All I see is a red dot blinking like this. I'm like, I said, no. So I'm sitting there like trying to turn it off, take the battery out, put the battery back in, same thing. I'm like, oh no. So at this point, it's a judging game. You know, it's like, how far is that deer really? And your eyes play tricks on you.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, okay, that deer is probably at 35 yards. I said, I'm going to wait till he gets clear of these does. And when he gets in this window right here, I'd already had the window raised up. I said, I'm letting it fly. I said, he's like 35 yards. So at the time, I had a four pin. I had a 20, 30, 40, and 50, I think. I was like, okay, I'm good. Settle down. I was like, okay, he's getting closer. He's at 30 yards now. Okay, cool. Pull back. Two does cross him. He's broadside. He's at my corn pile. He's eating a little bit. Let that arrow fly. I'm talking about here's his belly. That arrow goes right underneath his belly. And he takes off. I was like, damn. So I'm sitting there like, okay, is he gonna come back? He might come back. That deer ain't coming back. All the does scattered. I'm just sitting there just like. So I get home. My dad's like, how'd it go? I said, it didn't go well. He said, what happened? I said, my rangefinder battery's dead. He's like, what's that mean? I said, well, Dad, that's the rangefinder tells you how far the deer is so you know which pin to use. He's like, you should know that anyway. I said, yeah, Dad. I said, but when you're looking at that deer and you're thinking it's 30 yards, but in reality, he might be 35 or 37 yep. or 40, you know, and I'm like, man. So I go to Walgreens that night, you know, get another battery. I'm good to go. Go back out there the next day, same time, sits about the same time. I don't see that deer no more. Seen those does, you know, they were out there.
Oh, they going to come back.
Yeah, I ended up taking a doe, but I haven't seen that deer probably in almost eight years, probably. Dang.
Like seeing them with your eyes, but you still get them on camera?
Yeah, I'll still get him on camera because my uncle said, like, a lot of times when he's back there, like, bush hogging or, like early September or, like, maybe sometimes in August, he'll see him back there. But he's on the neighbor's property.
Yeah.
And then we can't hunt over there. But, like, the closer to, like, the rut, like, October, November, he'll come over on our property. Like, I guess he's walking across. I never can figure out which way he's going. That's the thing. Like, when I get him on camera, I'm like, okay, there he is. And they'll take three or four pictures, but I can't tell if he's going towards the creek or going somewhere else. But my uncle said he's seen him about every year, and he just, you know, he's like, hey, he's still back there. Nobody's killed him yet. Because every time that, you know, especially during the rut, we got everybody hunting around us, we know each other. So it's like, yeah. We'll message each other, like, hey, you kill one? Yeah, I got this one. Send me a picture. So every picture I send, it ain't him. So I'm like, he's out there somewhere. He's just real smart. Now, my uncle thinks he killed his son like 2 years ago because they've got very similar tines. very similar features. I'm like, it's got to be like his offspring, because I said, look at him, and look, he's just not as big as his daddy. Yeah. I said, that's him, you know. So I'm like, maybe one day I'll get a crack at him before somebody does. But if somebody gets him, dude, I'm telling you, he's by now, he's an absolute stud.
If he ate, he on.
He's got to be at least eight.
He on the other side of the hill. He down, going downhill.
Yeah, going downhill. Like, he don't come to no corn piles. You know, like,
is he rut? Participating in the rut?
So when we seen, when I, every time that I've seen him, it's either been between like Halloween, between the October 15th, October 31st, like in between those time frames. But my uncle said he's seen him after those time frames. And I'm like, well, I ain't, you know, usually November, second week of November, that's gun season. That's the only time he hunts. I'm like, Unc, if you've seen him, how come you ain't take a shot at it? Well, half time I'm back there on the tractor or something, and I ain't got. I'm like, you telling me you back there on the tractor during deer season? Well, yeah, sometimes you got to get the cows. I'm like, take your gun with you, you know. Well, I didn't think about that. Oh, it's deer season. If you back there on a tractor at any point during deer season, and it's rifle season,
it's go
that
time.
That gun is going to be right here on my hip.
Straight up.
But that's my uncle, though, man. I love him to death. He's funny about that sometimes. But
man, I had a deer a couple years ago that that's just like the second year that I actually been hunting. And, man, this deer was an absolute tank. 13 points, you know, both sides, seven by six. I mean, he was absolute stud. And I never got a crack at him, because, like, the first opening day, all these doe are in the field. And this buck's just chasing them, all these, you know, smaller bucks. And he, like, walked up to the fence line. He just stood there. Like, he was just watching them. But he would not come into that field at all. Just would not. And me being impatient, I watched him for probably about 3 hours. Just walked that fence line. But he was, like, it was a bunch of, like, a bunch of brush and stuff on the fence line. So I can only see his antlers. I knew who it was. And so I was like, man, I ain't even BSing. So I ended up just taking a, you know, probably about a four-year-old 8-point. That was pretty nice. And this buck, I like, my cameras caught him running down the creek. So he heard the gunshot. He took off. So probably like 2 weeks, no, a week later, because the season, our season in South Dakota is only 2 weeks long, rifle. So last week, I'm out there just hoping to get a glimpse of him. Didn't see him one time. So that Monday, season ends. So me and my girlfriend were going around and getting our cameras up and all that stuff. And I'm taking one of the cameras down, and I look up, and this bastard is sitting on top of his hill, bro, just looking like, yeah. you didn't get me, player. Like, yeah. And I'm watching him. And I was just like, man, like, I'd love to get this deer. And then we had a real hard winter that year. Then that spring, we were out shed hunting, and I found his shed, bro. Well, not his shed, but his dead head. He had, you know, died during the winter, had to have. And so took his head, set it out, let it, you know, end up making a year amount out of it. But, man, bro, he'd have been a nice one to get. Like, he was just, but he was old, though. Like, yeah. I sent his teeth, and he was like right around 9.5 years old. He was an old bastard.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, it'd have been a nice one then. Real yep. Nice.
But, you know, like, I've always heard this, and it just probably just a, one of those old wise tales, whatever. But they say if a buck gets to about 8.5, 9 years old, he's basically almost unkillable.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
You ain't getting them. Because, like, I want to say around, like, 9 and 10, they're basically equivalent to, like, a 56-year-old man.
Mm-hmm. Them does are coming to him. He ain't got to go to them does.
Or he not participating in the rut at all.
Or he's not participating at all, because he's, like you said, he's old. And
yeah, he done, so.
He done all of his rutting for his lifetime. You know, he's done.
One time he'll catch him is coming to him from either food or water.
Yep. And you got to get real lucky with him.
You're gonna yep. Your strategy is gonna have to be pinpoint,
or just have some look. And a lot of times, yeah. A lot of time it's look.
Hunting, man, a lot of times I tell people, like, it's a lot of skill. It takes a lot of woodmanship. But at the same time, you got to have a little bit of luck on your side, too. Yep.
Straight up. Because sometimes, like, you could do everything right. You got the wind right. You got beautiful food plot. You got tons of deer coming in. You know what I'm saying? Eating, don't know you there. And Mr. Big just might not have the one your target book just might, I'm going to go right instead of left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've heard stories where people like, man, I went in looking for this book, but then this big, 210-inch buck comes walking out. I ain't never seen him before. Got a crack at him. Sometimes it's just being in the right place at the right time. And I mean, that's really all it is being the right place, the right time. Because everything could be right and just ain't no deer there that day. The conditions are right, but, deer moving somewhere else. Or it's happened to me. I've hunted in places where I shouldn't have been hunting. The wind ain't right. It's hot. And just so happened, man. Something must have spooked that buck across the property. He took off, put enough distance between him and whatever spooked him, got comfortable, just trotting, and gotcha. He heard my dunzo.
Yeah. And I've also been in situations where, it was one year, we had a lot of does on our property. So my uncle was like, look, in our zone, you can kill as many does as you want. So you get four tags. One tag is your buck tag because Kentucky's a one buck state. The other three are doe tags. But if you want to kill any more does, all you got to do is go buy tags. But you can kill as many as you want.
Yeah.
So I ain't got my buck yet, but I'm like three does in. So I'm like, this is cool. So I'm like, got plenty of meat in the freezer and stuff for the family, that's when I ended up having to buy another deep freezer because I had so much meat that I was getting. And it's every time that I shot, and like I said, I was newer bow hunting. But every time I shot a doe at this corn pile, there's a fence right there. And I would hear blowing and snorting every time that I shot a doe. And I kept telling my buddies, and I'm like, man, like, what is that noise? It's like, man, there's probably more does back there that are snorting at you.
Yeah.
And he said, so the third one, the second one, same thing, third one, same thing. So I was like, okay, if another one comes out, I'd already bought, some more doe tags. So I was like, I'm going to wait until the very last minute to see what pops out. Said there might be a buck behind them. So here's one doe, two does, three does, four does. And they're sitting there eating in a corn pile. And by 5 minutes later, I just see a rack come out of the woods.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, it's a buck that's been behind them the whole time. Because I had never heard what a snort weed sounded like. And I had heard it those three times. And I'm like, what is that? And I was like, what in the world is that? And it's the deer. Well, you can't see it, but it's over here on my right. I ended up harvesting him. But, like, this was probably October. I think I got the date on there somewhere. But it was, like, around close to Halloween.
Yeah.
And, like, I kept hearing that noise every time I would take a doe, every time I'd shoot a doe. Because I'd wait about 10, 15 minutes before I got out of the blind, but I keep hearing that noise. I'm like, what in the world is that? Now I knew that buck hopped out of there chasing them does, whatever. There he was. I mean, he was probably in early rut, but his neck was a little bit big, but not like they are during November, but ended up harvesting him. And I told my buddy, I was like, hey man, come help me get him out. Cause I had a real jacked up truck at the time. I could not drag that thing on the truck by myself. He said, man, I told you it was probably something back here.
I said, dude, I never heard what that is. He said, you never heard what a snort wheeze is? I was like, what is a snort wheeze? So he pulls up YouTube, and I said, yeah, that's what I was hearing. He said, yeah, dude, them every time that you shot that, that buck was behind them snorting at you because he didn't know what you was. He thought you was another deer.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so that I see that in the woods now or here. You know, I see a buck, and he won't come to me. I'll snort wheeze at him.
Yep.
He might come. He might not. He might run off or whatever. I'm like, if he comes, it's game on then. But
bro, if they snort wheeze at me, I'll snort wheeze back, and that always pulls them in.
Yeah, they ready to fight then. Oh, yep. You're trying to shoot the fade.
That's it. Dude, I had a little decoy up one time, and I didn't know what no snort wheeze was. I know that my grunt call had a snort wheeze little thing on it.
Yeah, that's what my have my little Primo's call. That's what
yep,
I
had. That little Primo one. Yep.
Yep.
With the compass on it.
Yep.
Yep. Hey, so this buck is probably about 40 yards out, but I can only see his antlers. I couldn't see his body, and he. And the only thing I could think of was, I'm going to do it back. And I was like, I just did it. And as soon as I did it, I said, damn, I shouldn't have done that. And man, he just came trotting in. Boom, 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 boom. He got about 20 yards in front of my decoy. And I let that joker ride on him. It's a wrap, baby.
It's a wrap.
I was like, oh, that worked. And I thought I knew what I was doing. But that
don't work every time.
No, that buck was just, you know, receptive to it. Everybody else would have been like, probably took off.
Yep. So, all right, man. So if you had 48 hours before the season counting down to the season, you got 48 hours. What would your checklist look like?
Oh,
before
my
you
checklist.
Get out in the woods on that Saturday. So all right, it's 48 hours. Thursday night.
So put my broadheads in my quiver, on my arrows, put my arrows in my quiver. Check the weather, see what the weather's going to do. It's going to be hot. I'm getting my thermosel, getting it, you know, filled up. I'm getting all my clothes, put in my ozone bag. And I put all like my first aid stuff in my day pack. Let's see what else. Make sure my rangefinder got fresh batteries for the season. And that's pretty much it, man. Like, I pretty much, like, it's like the first day of school for me. I get my fit and everything all out and bagged up. I got my bag packed. Only thing I got to do now is just grab it and go. So, I'm fully packed. Day pack ready. Broadheads, bow, broadheads, arrows, everything set up. Release. I put my release in my glove compartment because I know, like, it don't leave my car during the season. That's where it stay.
Mm-hmm.
So release, got my tags in my bag. I've literally driven 6 hours and realized I left my tags at home. So tags go in the bag and they don't leave for the season, and I'm ready to go. So normally 48 hours before the hunt, I am packed up and ready to go. So the next day, all I'm doing is just, you know, actually just looking at game cam photos and hyping myself up.
Yeah. That's basically the same thing I do, except I don't keep my release I keep it in the truck, but I keep mine on the rear view right there so I can see it. Because if not, I'm going to forget it. I can't tell you how many releases I've left in the truck. I have to walk back and go get them, but it's part of it. Part of leaving something. I've left all kind of binoculars, rangefinders, all kind of stuff I've left in the truck. I'm like, why am I forgetting this? Now I got a pack for all that. You know, I got a vinyl pouch with all that on there, so I don't forget none of that. But yeah, man, I appreciate you coming on tonight, man. I think we've covered everything that we need to cover. And if something we didn't cover, man, y'all just let us know in the comments. When I post this on YouTube, Instagram, Apple, whatever, just let me know. Tell the folks how you they can reach you.
Oh, yeah, you can reach me. Huh?
What did you about to say?
I'm going to say, hey, and if worse coming to worse, man, you can go to Google and type in hunting checklist and print one out and just check that shit off.
Yeah. I know some of my homies do when they go elk hunting, man. They'll print off a list and make sure they got everything.
It's so much stuff, man, when you elk hunt. So you got, like, I'm getting ready to go. So I'm probably next weekend I'll be getting my checklist together to make sure I got all my meals, make sure I got my water purifier, first aid kit, my tent, my sleeping bag, my little mat that goes underneath my sleeping bag, like all that. I'm getting it all out, and I lay it out, and then I pack everything up one by one and just go on a little checklist. Boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
But if you want to find me, you can go to all my social. I'm on all social media platforms: Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. It's gonna be DA_DreadedArcher17 on all the platforms. And then if you want to listen to the podcast, the Dreaded Archer podcast, you can find that on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and of course, Carbon TV.
That's what's up, man. The Dreaded Archer, ladies and gentlemen. This podcast will be out on Apple, Spotify, my personal YouTube channel. Please like, subscribe, comment. Try to get my followers up before Christmas. If I get to 1,000 followers on any platform before Christmas, I will be doing a giveaway. I'm not telling y'all what that is just yet, but it's some goodies right before Christmas. And if you guys are looking for a new shotgun for dove season, Retail USA, you need to go check them guys out. Great shotguns, great company, great people to deal with. I've been shooting one for about 3 years now and absolutely love them. I'm shooting a Masamara. They just came out with an Ace and an Ace R. They're also making 22 handguns right now. They've got some rifles in the works. So go to retailusa.com. Check them out, man. So big game, small game, all game. We do this too.
It's your boy C. Will. What the hell?
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.